prayer. And then the reminder today that out of that flows a life. And that is a life of peacemaking and a life of justice making. It is a life of loving the neighbor. And today we want to share, especially in the area of nonviolence, because part of the covenant and also the sharing of OSMT has been to share with each other and encourage each other in the discipline of nonviolence. What do we mean by nonviolence? And I'm going to call on John to share a little background on the word as it comes to us from Mahatma Gandhi.
As we thought of this session, we knew that we were in the most difficult aspect of what OSMT is committed to, the most difficult aspect maybe to live, but it's certainly the most difficult to communicate. Part of the reason is that the word nonviolence sounds like it's the absence of something that we're talking about. And the easiest way to image the absence of violence is cowardice or indifference, and that's not what we mean. So you usually find that you spend a lot of time saying what you're not talking about in order to get into this, and we didn't want to do that today. So I'm supposed to do that in a couple minutes and have that done. One of the ways to do that is Mahatma Gandhi could have used the word nonviolence. He would have had ahimsa, and he would have said nonviolence. Instead, he coined a word, fancy word, satyagraha. Maybe the best English way to say that is truth power. During the 60s, you could say it with soul power and communicate what you meant. I think in the brochure, it probably says active reconciling nonviolence in order to get some idea that you're talking about something active. But what we found is this. The best way to communicate what we're talking about is not definitions and a lecture, but stories. I'll add that the most fun I've had communicating it is to add also songs. Ray and I traveled around for 2 years. Let me tell you a story. Let me sing you a song. We did nothing but tell stories and sing songs, including whole weekends on nonviolence where it was all songs and stories, and maybe that communicated it the best. So what we've decided to do today is have some OSMT members tell stories of nonviolence. Did I do it?
I drew a little picture here of the cycle of violence where someone does this to me, so I do this to that person, so that person then does this to me, and on until someone wins and someone loses. And the joy of this life in Christ is that commission and that ministry of breaking that cycle. And is there any songs about... can be anything like love, peace, joy, Christianity, or...
I'd like to introduce this song by having you sing another song, but I want to say one thing about it, since we're telling stories. I think that the reason we use the word above so much, you know, like unseen things above, I love to tell the story of unseen things above, because it rhymes with love, right? But as you sing that that part of it, be mindful that we're not just this nonviolence, satyagraha, is not just a concept that's floating around out there, but it's something that lives right here, and Jesus came to remind us of that. So we'll sing a little song together, and then I'll do a song, and see if we can pull into this love, peace stuff.
I love to tell the story.
Be
Before there was earth, water, sky, before there was how or where or why, before there was woman, and before there was man, before there was no, before there was oh, yes, I can. There was the Word. Then came creation. Then came the fall, then came the flood, then came the call, then came the promise, then came the land, then came captivity, then came the wilderness band, and there was the Word. And the Word became flesh, and the Word became old, and the Word became one of our own.
Some called Him Savior, some called Him King, some called Him the One who would change everything. Some
and the Word became bold. Word became one of our right. Wherever blindness is turned into sight, wherever death is turned into birth, and wherever warfare is turned into peace on this earth, there is the Word. And the Word became flesh, and the Word
Jenny Pesch was a reading of her beginning from Tacoma.
This is from Faith and Vials by Thomas Merton. It was written in the 60s, and it's amazing how relevant it still is. But this is not inclusive language, by the way. Furthermore, Christian nonviolence and meekness imply a particular understanding of the power of human poverty and powerlessness when we are united with the physical strength of Christ. The Beatitudes indeed today. Formal existential understanding of the dynamic of the kingdom of God.
Just speak up a little.
Jenny, it's got to be louder. Do you want to? Do you want to come up in front?
Sure. There's so much in here that's good that instead of trying to use the adversary as leverage for one's own effort, to realize one's ends, however ideal, nonviolence seeks only to enter into a dialogue with him in order to attain together with him the common good of man, people. Nonviolence must be realistic and concrete. Like ordinary political action, it is no more than the art of the possible. But precisely the advantage of nonviolence is that it lays claim to a more Christian and more humane notion of what is possible. But the powerful believe that only power is effective. The nonviolent resistor is persuaded of the superior power of love, openness, peaceful negotiation, and above all, of truth. For power can guarantee the interests of some men, but it never can foster the good of all men or of man. Power always protects the good of some at the expense of all the others. Only love can attain and preserve the good of all. Any claim to build the security of all in force is a manifest imposture.
Now we're going to share some stories just of life of nonviolence. And I'll call on these, and we're hoping today to have a few minutes at the end for reflection or other stories. So I've asked those that participate to try for 5 minutes. If it gets a little beyond that, I have a very gentle way of donging. It's my Lionel train watch. And I'll push the button, and you'll hear this kind of choo-choo, and that means to bring it into the station. Do you hear it? That's called Bring It Home.
You're going to have to be a little more, maybe a little less subtle.
Let's begin. Ray, would you begin? Ray from Cincinnati. So, do they play baseball there? Yeah, Ray from Cincinnati.
My story is actually a brief story of my life, from a career soldier to a peace activist. Starting with my childhood, I had learned in Sunday school about living a peaceful life, living the Christian life, the Christ-like life, the Prince of Peace. Later, when I became an adult, I learned that Christianity, or the Christ, was not the Christ of Prince of Peace. And when I was 17 years of age, I had various awards in music in high school and college level. So it looked like I was heading for a career as a professional cellist and clarinetist. But at 17 years of age, I gave that up for a career in the Army, but I didn't know it was going to be a career at the time. And so I traded my cello and clarinet for weapons. And while serving in the military, I was educated there in college that all our based political issues in regards to war was based upon a just war theory. Well, I discovered that war not only kills the military enemy, it kills civilians as well, men, women, and children. And I'd also learned that the United States does not follow the very conventions that it created, such as the Geneva Convention. That those various conventions of human rights, etc., apply to everybody else but us. So our targets are civilians. I'm being very blunt and very crude and quick and brief on this. So I've kind of found that the various wars that I was in, I participated in Korea. There was still war going on. This is in the late 60s and 70s. And in Vietnam, et cetera. I had a few years over in East Asia. And kind of discovered that just war theory is out of the picture. We also, like I again mentioned, we didn't follow any of the conventions. And And when I was having turmoil with my Christian faith, what I thought was dealing with the Christ, the Prince of Peace, and Christ, the not Prince of Peace. And so I had a question with the chaplains about this turmoil that I was experiencing. And the chaplains said, well, it's okay, it's war. And so I went to the civilian preachers of various denominations, including religion. And he says, don't question it. It's patriotic. Do not question our leaders and actions. And so while in East Asia, I saw also massive dying of hunger in many, many people. Something so simple as lack of food. And that really tore me up to see that. And so while there, in the free time, worked with various missionaries who dealt with homeless children and hunger issues. Haven't experienced the frustrations they had to resolve that. Sorry. Got to still touch a little bit when I think about it. Yeah. So I asked the same questions as they had. How can we eradicate hunger? What are the root causes of hunger? And just giving away all the money all the time didn't do it. There was always 10 times more to feed, etc. So it wasn't the only possible solution. I had to do something even better for myself. And I also became kind of disillusioned with Christianity, too, while over there in East Asia. And I saw that the Buddhists were far more Christian than the Christians were. So it had me thinking about a lot of things. Then as my career went on, and I wound up going to Germany, my last overseas assignment in the late 70s, two experiences there that further brought on to my questioning. When I was serving in Grafenwehr, we had an exercise there, and it was to simulate a nuclear artillery piece, just one single artillery round. And so we did not explode a real nuclear piece, we just simulated one. And that created a shockwave 2 miles away and knocked us all off our feet. Shattered windows from all the neighboring German villages and everything else. And that didn't include all the nuclear fallout or anything else if it was real. That was just a initial shockwave from one nuclear artillery round. And for us officers and NCOs, that was a very rude, crude eye-opener for us about the realities of nuclear war. And the second incident over in Germany was under President Carter, the liberal president, the professing Christian president, started bragging to the world about, well, we have the neutron bomb, and it's great and glorious. It destroys entire cities of civilians in one rock and leaves the building standing. And us, many of us officers and NCOs, found between these two instances, you thought, how insane we've become. I decided to leave full-time active duty after that. Came back to the United States, and I still worked full-time for the Department of Defense, and also part-time in the U.S. Army Reserves. While working for the Department of Defense, one of my very last project that I was on was developing training manuals and training the El Salvadorian Army. I had learned later on that the El Salvadorian Army was the very same guys who raped, tortured, and murdered the nuns. I had a hard time with that. While at a Lutheran church that was nearby, that church also took in some Vietnamese boat people as one family. And at a potluck dinner at someone's house of the Lutheran church, I was introduced to this Vietnamese guy. I had since learned during that time, he and I, we had our little conversation, that he was also in Vietnam, in the exact area where I was at, and he was an MBA, later became a Viet Cong, and was responsible for killing some of my fellow comrades. So he and I had our, we had no more verbal communications. We sat there on the floor. Our communications for the next half hour was by eye contact. We said a lot. I finally went to the pastor. I told him who he really was. You see, the boat people that we took in were supposed to be supposed allies of ours. He was clearly the enemy. And the pastor said, more or less, I'm summing what he said. He says, so what? That was also a major shock for me. And then I went to an international Lutheran singles conference, and one of the main speakers was Marva Don, who's a member of OSMT. She told me about OSMT. So for the following year, after that, I kept in communication with her, and getting counseling from her, and she was a theologian too. And I quit my Department of Defense job, still in reserve though. Wound up working for a university in radiation safety, since I also had training in that, in health physics, through the Army. And so I started working in that environmental profession, not, you know, dealing, getting away from the world. In my reserve, I went transferred to another reserve unit and wound up being an artillery unit. And since learned that they also dealt with nuclear artillery pieces. And a little while later, I finally committed myself to living a life of nonviolence and joined OSMT. That was a major transformation for my life. When I did, I'm going to share a little bit about it. And and declared in my reserve unit I would no longer fire any machine guns and other heavy weapons and stuff. And, my life was threatened a few times, and I finally quit reserves and worked very actively and became the leader of working, well, very actively with other activists and stuff to get Fernald, a nearby nuclear weapons production facility, shut down, and it wound up ultimately becoming the world's, or the U.S.'s first nuclear weapons production facility to be shut down, and they created a chain reaction for the rest. And this here is not just say like a peace activist in home, but I had learned by during my turmoil, though, I had studied Martin Luther King, because he was a Christian minister and he professed a nonviolent life. And about demonstrations and everything else. And I said, wow, what's this? And then he further led me to Gandhi, which was the route he could follow. And so Gandhi, by studying Gandhi, I learned more about Christ. Because Gandhi was a professional, an expert on the study of Christ. And so I learned. And that to live a Christ-like life doesn't mean about to... I asked myself the questions then, what would Christ do? And that led to the Allied Army. And not only living a life of non-war, it also meant about the, like, for instance, the Beatitudes. What about our neighbor? Even the one I don't like. Jesus said, what you do to the least, you do to me. And so I, Marva, and others, including Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, who was one of the four main people of the Civil Rights Movement. He's a guy in Mobile, Alabama, that King, Jesse Jackson, all the rest came down to help out. He kept on getting, his house and church kept on getting blown up all the time. I mean, he had moved to Cincinnati, so got to deal with him a lot, too. And Maurice McCracken, who recently died, was my mentor through all these years after Marva Don. And so I learned that Christ is the Prince of Peace. Just like Mahatma Gandhi says, as he was telling the Christian ministers, he had stated, said, the rest of the world knows that Christ stands for the life of nonviolence and peace. Only the Christians don't know it. And so I live with the questions for myself, what would Jesus do in whatever situation? Also, the Lord's Prayer is also the core for my life too. Because in there,
prayer is 10 minutes.
Yes,
this right into the station.
That in the Lord's Prayer it says, God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And I understood this as earth is also our heaven, and or to be heaven like. So if that's the case, then I have to live as if it's heaven. So I have to treat others that way. And I can't ignore the person who's starving. I can't ignore the person who's being mistreated because he's black or because he's, I don't know, whatever political affiliation, whatever it is. So anyway, that's crudely my summation.
Thank you. Thank you. I had a conversion. I just couldn't touch my train button. Thank you for sharing. Let's see. Mary, would you share? Or, do you want the chair?
My apologies to you that have heard this story, but it's one of my favorite stories of violence. It's a story about Maggie, who is in our faith community in Minneapolis and has also been on staff at Holman Village as a nurse. Maggie worked at Abbott Northwestern Hospital and one night was coming home from work. Her husband and three children had gone to Pittsburgh to be with her husband's family, and so she was home alone. And as was her custom, when she came home from work, she got into her jogging clothes and decided that she would run for a while. She did her jogging and realized that she had been running longer than usual and it was starting to get dark and misting a little bit. So she decided to cut through a park near the Plymouth Avenue Bridge in Minneapolis. And as she did so, as she entered the park, a very large man grabbed her by the arm and said, "You're coming with me." And he took her and he pinned her up against the tree. And she said, "I looked into this man's eyes and they were filled with hatred and anger. I knew he was on drugs or something." She said, "I had never seen anyone who looked quite this way." And she said, "First of all, I was angry, I was frightened, and I didn't know what to do." She said, "I looked out onto the sidewalk through the park, and there was a small man walking a small dog. And my first thought was, I should call for help." And then she looked at the size of the guy and said, "There's no way he's going to help me. In fact, both of us would probably be hurt if I called him into the woods." And Maggie said, "I don't know what got into me, but all of a sudden I put my arm up and I pushed him away and I said, 'Look, you're coming with me.' And I took his shoulder and whipped him around and he was very startled." I understand that serotonin in our body, when we're angry or upset, when someone else is confronted by anger or laughter, they cannot be aggressive, or when they're startled,
surprise,
or when they laugh.
Surprise.
All right. They cannot be aggressive. And if this was the serotonin in this man, must have been at a high level or something, because it just was so startled. She said, "You're coming with me." And she kind of guided him out of the woods and saw a little grassy patch next to the Plymouth Avenue Bridge and said, "Sit down, we need to talk." And so she and the man sat down and they began to visit. She said, "My name is Maggie Ferris. I'm a mother, I'm a nurse. I have three children. I'm a Roman Catholic." She went on and on, making herself as human as she possibly could. And then she said, "What about you?" And the man gave a name. He said, "I had been a Vietnam veteran. I have completely lost my life in every sense of the word. My wife has left me. I cannot keep a job. My job in Vietnam was in this one small village to line up the women and children and old men and have them executed." He said, "I cannot live past that experience." They must have talked for 2 hours, and Maggie heard this man's story. She said at the end of the 2 hours, she realized she was cold and shivering, and she didn't know what to do. She said, it's a little awkward in a position like that. You don't say, is it okay if I leave now? What are you really going to do to me? She said, you know, I don't live very far from here. My husband is going to be worried that I'm not home and it's dark. Would you mind walking me to my front door, neglecting to tell him that her husband and children were gone? And the man said, I'd be very happy to. And he walked her to the screen door and said goodnight. The next morning, when Maggie came out of her screen door, there was a little bouquet of yellow daisies and dandelions with a note that said, thank you for being my friend. You're the only one that's ever listened to me.
Let's share a song.
And even though the song's a little bit dated here, because it had to do with fears that Anya had from conversations that she heard about nuclear war, things like that, I think we probably live maybe in even more fearful times now, because not only do you go to school and hear about these things, but you go to school and wonder if they're going to happen at your school. And please sing along with me in the chorus of this, which is, you can tell me, you can tell me, you can tell me, I won't laugh at you. The night is gently falling on the happy times we've had today. I've brought your glass of water once again. Before I tuck you in and say goodnight, I love you, is there anything you'd like to talk about or ask of me, my daughter? You're looking worried, tell me what's it all about. Is it something that the kids have said at school? Did they scare you in their ignorance, or did they hurt you in their pride? Did they laugh at you? Did they make you feel a fool? You can tell me, you can tell me, you can tell me, I won't laugh at you. That you say, it's not any of the things I've mentioned. They said something else that's got your attention, and you think I'll think you're silly if you say it. I don't think that I will think you're silly. I've heard some mighty silly statements in my time. I expect that I'll be hearing more. So the kids are saying the world will end in 1984, and Minneapolis will have a war next year. And you're thinking, maybe we could move to England before then, because they've had their war, so they'll not have one again. You can tell me, you can tell me.
Think of the discipline and nonviolence and the very little, small times of life. Karen and I were moving into a new apartment in Seattle, and we heard that the manager would scream mercilessly at you at the beginning so you wouldn't bother her the rest of the time. So she was letting us into the room, and I had not picked up the key at the right place properly, so she began to scream at both of us and insult us and tell us. And right in the middle, there was this brief pause, and I said, "Do you have any grandchildren?" And it's like Mary said, you can't be violent when you're surprised. And yeah, so she went down to her apartment and got the pictures. And we sat out in the hallway and looked at all the pictures of her grandchildren. And the rest of her time living there, she always tried to be in places where we would walk by, just to talk. Well, another story. I'll call on Gary, would you? Where are you, Gary? Oh, there. Gary is from Duluth. Is that right? No, I know you. And has been a doctor and also active in the movement of peace. So I'm going to share your story. Okay. Do you want to sit here?
Yeah.
And I'll. Time is moving, so I will push the train button.
Great song, great emotional message. I am a physician that deals a lot with post-traumatic stress disorder and patients who have terrible trauma in their lives. And I'm oftentimes privileged and have the rather awesome responsibility of listening to the stories. And believing the story is very therapeutic. It's really important. My special interest is the victims of the Vietnam War, the combat soldiers that are just all over the United States. Oftentimes they're up in the woods. We call them the tripwire vets up in northern Minnesota, the bush vets. They're people that have come back horribly traumatized with the intrusive memory that they can't get out of their brains. And they're tormented by that with flashbacks and nightmares and insomnia and lack of concentration and depression and suicidality. And effects go on and on and on. And I've got 1,000 stories I could tell you. But as a composite, I tell you about one Vietnam veteran that I saw. I worked in a psychiatric hospital for 2.5 years. And one day, this one person came in. I was dealing with the medical issues, but I had time to ask him about his story. And said that he was in Vietnam, had lots of things to say. He knew precisely, he was demented, but he knew exactly the numbers of his platoons and where he was, and I was just amazing how accurate his memory was. He couldn't remember what happened the day before, what he had for breakfast, but he knew what his combat troop numbers, etc., 5th Marines or something. He saw, he gave me a litany of the poisonous snakes and the rats and the insects and just the horrors of combat and guerrilla warfare in the jungle. But he recounted the fact that he had seen one of his buddies stab himself with his bayonet in his thigh to get out of obviously a suicidal mission that his platoon was planning. And within minutes, he blew his brains out. The same individual blew his brains out, probably from the pain, the mental anguish, the horrors of being in a situation that's just intolerable. Not only did he see that, which was very traumatic to him, he saw three other Vietnam soldiers in his platoon blow their brains out with their handguns. This individual saw four other individuals commit suicide, which aren't in the statistics. Those were homicides. Those were four of the 58,000 on the wall that we regard as killed in action. We don't label them as suicides. So that got me thinking. I was already in the peace movement by the time I'd heard that, but it really got me thinking, what is this all about? This guy was a Bible-believing, prior to Vietnam, he was a Bible-believing Christian, and he'd had no contact with the church since then. Got me really interested in a lot of issues there. One is, what's the role of the church in blessing warfare? What's the role of our society in putting innocent, children, their average age was 19 in Vietnam, innocent children into a situation that requires tremendous maturity, and we expect them to come back whole. So I started reading the literature, the psychiatric literature on post-traumatic stress disorder, especially with regards to combat, and discovered that rape trauma and abuse and molestation and neglect and abandonment all do the same things at various degrees. So that what we are labeling post-traumatic stress disorder is actually partial expressions. We have all sorts of people with partial expressions of the disorder. They don't meet the entire criteria, but they have the depression, but they might not have something else. So along my studies then, I came upon just overwhelming evidence that mental illness and criminality and addictive disorders, eating disorders are in large minorities or large majorities and sometimes totally related to violence in one form or another. Along that road, I encountered Holy Village, Lutheran Peace Fellowship, OSMT, and in my journey of being sort of the only one in my church or one of the little remnant in my Lutheran church back home and in a small remnant of peacemakers and people who really see this in a different light, I needed the spiritual rejuvenation of this group. Wouldn't you be proud to belong to a group that has these people in it? I certainly feel privileged. But needing Holy Village from time to time is my spiritual fare. Needing Lutheran Peace Fellowship and the wonderful people, especially on the board that I know, has been my spiritual fare. And OSMT has been my spiritual fare to keep me on my journey of peacemaking. Let me tell you just one little story that was Dorothy Day's favorite story from the entitled the Lady of Little Faith from in the middle of the Brothers Karamazov. And this woman had been in the Russian Orthodox Church all her life, and she just lost her faith. She'd been done all the rituals, honored all the icons, did the incense, and there was something missing. She didn't believe in God anymore. And she thought she was going to die, and she was despairing. And so she went to the holy monk, the holiest monk of Russia, Father Zosima, who was the main character in the Brothers Karamazov, and said to him, I'm despairing. I want you to prove to me that God exists, that God loves me, and that my soul is immortal. She wanted him to help her out with that. And he said to her, nobody can prove to you that God exists, that God loves you, or that your soul is immortal. And she just collapsed. She thought, now what am I going to do? But, he said, I can show to you how you can prove to yourself that God exists that God loves you and that your soul is immortal. And all you have to do is every day start doing the little nonviolent Christ-like deeds of love and mercy. And pretty soon you'll be certain that God loves you, that your soul is immortal, and that there is a God. In other words, participate in the reality of a merciful, all-loving God, and you'll soon become certain of it.
Thank you. And also our thanksgiving for the work that you're doing us with those who are the victims or the trauma. So we're thankful for you. Anna Mae from Taos, New Mexico. It's 2,000 feet higher than Santa Fe, which is 2,000 feet higher than Elba.
Yes, that's true. 4,000 or 5,000 feet higher than Holden. My name is Anna Mae Patterson, and I've been part of the Order of Saints Martin and Teresa since almost the beginning. And I have to start by saying the reason I'm a member of the Order of St. Martin and Teresa is because I'm a coward. It's very hard for me, I think, in our culture to live a life of nonviolence, as Dan says, to not get caught up in the illusions. So for me, OSMT and my participation in a couple of religious communities that I've been a part of in Minneapolis and in Washington, D.C., have been an attempt to surround myself with people and situations that will either protect my cowardness or cowardice, or you know, help me feel like I can cope with it. If it's time of confession, I guess that's what we can say. However, 4 years ago, I moved away from these communities to Taos, New Mexico, and I was on my own. I wasn't a part of the community. And I'd just like to share a really brief story that, for me, nonviolence is a way of sanity in an insane world that comes primarily out of myself and my own tendency to be violent and to be judgmental. And after I got to Taos, I got a job working for an organization that was giving hospitality to other people, and I worked very hard for this organization for about 10 months or a year. And through a story, I won't go into at length, the woman who'd worked before me had done some things that the organization didn't like, but she had left and she was no longer there. And they discovered, they thought that I had done something similar to what she did. So with no warning, they fired me. And they blamed me for stealing and for lying to them and for destroying the organization, etc. And they refused to allow my claim for unemployment compensation. And they were getting ready to charge me with fourth-degree felonies and all kinds of stuff. And my experience of this was a little saying that that I read at one of the bed and breakfasts that I was taking care of. A lie has no feet and cannot stand, but takes wings and flies all over the land. And that was exactly my experience, that these people who had trusted me often with their bed and breakfast to take care of them while they were gone, and I thought we had personal relationships with each other, had now turned on me and were accusing me of all kinds of things, which in fact I had not done. But if you live in a small community and you are accused of those things, then that word goes out and there's nothing, literally nothing, you can do to catch up with those lies. It simply doesn't, there isn't anything you can do. So I tried, I was in deep anguish about this issue for a long time and tried to figure out what to do. Some people said that I should sue the organization for defamation of character, that you know I should sue them for whatever else I could sue them for. And I finally realized that to participate in that system would be to engage myself in the same kind of violence that they were throwing at me. So I hired a couple of lawyers to defend me before the Unemployment Compensation Board because I felt that getting unemployment was my right. I had been fired unjustly and accused unjustly. This issue dragged on for probably about 6 or 7 months with the hearing being postponed and all this kind of stuff. And during this whole time, I tried with the help of friends at OSMT, especially to just keep myself free of the bitterness of this experience, which is very hard, you know, when your livelihood is threatened and when you don't know a lot of people in a new community and this stuff is going out about you. It's not easy. But God was with me, and I didn't descend into bitterness, and I had some people who helped me laugh and a wonderful chorus that I could sing with once a week, and they didn't know anything about this trauma going on in my life, so I could just be there. Well, we eventually had the hearing, and the hearing officer listened to the testimony of these people and their accusations against me and decided very quickly that they were false. And so I was given unemployment compensation, which wasn't quite enough to pay the lawyers, but that's also a factor of common life. And I think the greatest gift that nonviolence gave me during that time was just a way to get up each day and to go into that situation. And when I met those people on the street, which I did quite frequently because it is a small town, to greet them pleasantly and kindly, and to not give back to them the kind of anger and hostility and violence that they were giving me. I can't say that there's ever been any reconciliation. There hasn't. But there has been a resolution in me, and I no longer have to carry that experience. I can share it with you, but I don't have to carry it in my soul. And I think that for me, that's one of the greatest gifts of nonviolence.
Thank you. Is there a song? No, we have one more. Should we do the one more story? We have about 10 more minutes. Jerry, are you here? Oh,
yeah, there. Why don't you come on and then we'll... Should we do the song? Okay, come on. Jerry Pedersen, come on. The story I would usually tell is about back in the Second World War. I was a Marine. I was out in the Pacific and the dropping of the atomic bomb and what it meant to me. And then a couple weeks later being aboard the USS Missouri when they signed the peace surrender ceremonies, I was part of that honor guard. And that whole process convinced me that conflict and war is not the way of peace. Peace is the way. And I became committed to peacemaking at that point. What I want to mention is just something more recent. I'm a member of the Interfaith Peace Ministry of Orange County. And we made up of Jews, Muslims, Christians, Baha'i, Buddhists, a few others. And a couple of years ago, peace movements in Southern California started folding because, after all, we now had peace with the Russians and the Suez Crisis was over with and atomic bomb is no longer a threat, apparently, you know. And so people weren't interested, and the biggest peace movement in Southern California folded. And we were talking about the same thing. And I was pushing, wait a minute, no, there's a definite need. And I tried to get the group to go with the Fellowship of Reconciliation and define peace as nonviolence. People weren't quite prepared for that, even though they were deeply committed to peacemaking. And so we decided to have a series of forums asking various religious groups to tell their heritage about peace and especially nonviolence, if they felt that was the case. Director of the Islamic Society, Jewish rabbi, a Roman Catholic sister, each had a separate evening to present their forum, and we became convinced that each of these religions indeed do have a deep heritage of not only peace and peacemaking, but of understanding it as nonviolence. But each of the Muslims and the Jews made one qualification. They said towards the end of the presentation, but of course this is predicated that we survive. Whether it's as individuals or as a group of people, only if we survive as a people can we be committed to nonviolence. And therefore, and just 2 days before the one presentation, the Israel had bombed the refugee center in South Lebanon, killing 76 people. And the justification of these acts of violence, I have, and one of the conclusions that we came to out of this was that the difficulty in promoting and talking about nonviolence is everybody wants to talk about the extreme case. What would you do if somebody attacked your wife and you had to defend her? You know, would you kill somebody or would you let them kill her? Or survival of a nation, you know, finally feeling justified to go to war and so on. And Christians, of course, have done exactly the same thing throughout all our history. We came to the conclusion that what John called active nonviolence or active reconciling violence has to be what we emphasize, and the place to begin is not with the extreme case. What would you do if? But rather in the thousand kinds of peacemaking that goes on in a daily way, whether it's how you rear your children and teach them to deal with conflict situations, or dealing with abusive persons, or negotiation, reconciliation efforts, whatever. And that many people can buy into that and eventually understand what nonviolence is all about. Shalom is not, and shalom, salam as the Islams would, Muslims would say, is not the absence of something, it's not the absence of conflict or absence of war, but it's the fullness of life as God intended it, as God gives it, and of course it's not only a gift, but it's a goal that we need to work for. And so that's been our emphasis the last year or two.
Thank you. And for all the work that you have done over the years, we could tell many stories, but thank you, Jane. Before we have our closing song, just from all of you who are here, and thanks again for coming, are there just any responses to any of these that we're sharing or any of your thoughts? We have a few minutes for that. Does anyone, this is your chance.
Sure. Dan, I'd like to say that I brought the newsletters from the Interfaith Justice and Peace Center for Northwest Ohio, and even though some things are local, there are many national items mentioned in there, and you're welcome to pick them up and take them and read them in your spare time. And could I share the prayer that I have from Ireland?
We're going to sing and then we'll close with the prayer.
Close with that, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other responses from anyone?
Just that I especially like this last gentleman's comment is that when we start listening to other stories and you tend to think of the global, you know, the big picture and what you can do, but how difficult that might be, and his point being that this comes up thousands of times a day, something you could do very often.
Yeah, we had that sharing in Matins 2 mornings ago, the school incident with the teacher. Remember, Bill?
I just want to resonate to what he just said and add, somehow we are looking at the globalness, but right here for us, I think we need to take a look at why the ARA, the American Rifle Association, continues to perpetuate where those persons, perhaps those same persons who are having difficulties with post-traumatic stress and all of its many fraught areas, can get to those guns and use them on people. Because not all of them are going to be as successful as Maggie was.
Yeah. And it's a point to say there's parallels to being in the movement of nonviolence and being in the movement of war. And for both, sometimes it seems to work. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. That's what we mean by the cross. But the promise is that God has promised shalom. Shalom will come.
I just want to add a P.S. on that Maggie story that's, to me, the ultimate nonviolent statement. When our community of St. Martin listened to her tell this, somebody said, but Maggie, if you had had a knife and he was going to violate it, wouldn't you have used it? And she said, no, I'm ready to meet Jesus, and I don't think he is. And that was her answer.
I just changed my mind. Let's have the prayer and then the song. I'm always in process.
Maybe this is more lighthearted than you expected.
Oh, a lighthearted prayer?
A lighthearted prayer.
I love it.
Okay, this is, we heard in Ireland. Dear Lord, do not make us like porridge. Gray and stiff and hard to stir up. Make us like Cheerios, round and holy and ready to serve.
I want to ask one more joyful thing again, that there's a whole group of younger people, not are now adults, but we're part of a peace group at PLU called Satyagraha, which nobody could ever pronounce. That was part of the fun of it. But there'd be many stories. But one, we were having a peace demonstration once on the campus, and a group of other students attacked us with water balloons. And nobody, I always remember when one hit me right in the chest, and I just said, at last I've been persecuted. It's just a prayer for faithfulness in the very small ways, but also God, help me and have mercy on me that I would have your peace when something very, very critical would come. The song.
Well, this is another kind of lighthearted one, but with all the songs I've ever written, which are funny or try to be funny, I realize that they come from a very serious place in me. So this is sort of the lighter look at something which I think is a big issue in my life and a big issue in a lot of people's lives, and that's stuff. And some people had asked me to sing this song, but it makes me remember that the accumulation of stuff, which is really a kind of first world thing, more than anything, not only becomes violence toward other cultures, you know, people who produce the stuff and don't get paid, or people who can't have any stuff because you've got too much stuff, and it's also violence against ourselves, because I find that, you know, there have been times in my life where it's like dealing with my stuff feels like a full-time job. I never actually get out and live, so. Anyway, and we all know people like that. Not yourself, of course. So anyway, this is a very long song because it's stuffed full of stuff, but I'm going to cut out.
Lots of the stuff.
So I see if there's anything you can relate to it, and I'll just do like about half of it. And you can pick up the chorus pretty fast, and people that know it can do it. I've got boxes stuffed full of stuff I haven't looked at since the Iron Age. The other day I found another pile of stuff up in the attic. Exactly what's in there is hard to gauge. There's a crusty old dresser, well I swore I'd scrape it off. A big old trunk without a key, I suppose it could be Jimmy Hoffa. Clothes that never fit me, clothes I never liked, and here's some clothes I don't know who they are. drove down. I guess I saved that ugly suit in case I made it into Congress. And here's a polyester wedding gown. Some coveralls performing a silk dress that's turning green. Some tie-dye, some black leather, Oxford shirts from L.L. Bean. Here's a bridesmaid dress I wouldn't wear if I was paid. I must have saved it because it cost a mint. And there's all this kind of stuff just hanging around in the closet, in the attic, in the lost and found. You keep on getting more, but you probably got enough. Everybody's got a ton of stuff. Well, maybe you could solve the problem if you took a couple classes. One's designed to cut your stress in half, like time management or yoga, powerlifting and tai chi, or just fall back. Send meditation on a Zafu for your every yin yang. 20 ways to tie a scarf, you know that could be just the thing. Keep yourself pretty busy and you won't have time to think about the stuff you wish you could forget. And there's all kinds of stuff just hanging around in the closet, in the attic, in the lost and found. Keep on getting more, but you probably got enough. Everybody's got a ton of stuff. Toilet seat that says, have a nice day. Every time I worry that I'm wasting my whole life, I tell myself, at least I don't make that. And there's all kinds of stuff just hanging around in the closet, in the attic, in the lost and found. You keep on getting more, but you probably got enough. Everybody's got a ton of stuff. Well, finally, while we're on the subject of stuff, how about songs with too many words? Used to be enough just to have a simple chorus, little harmony and major thirds. Now I try to cram every idea I've ever had into one song, and when I finally come to sing it, well, it's half an hour too long. What happened to the good old songs like We Shall Overcome? All we are saying is give peace a chance.
There's all kinds of stuff just hanging around in the closet, in the attic, in the lost and found. Keep on getting more, but you probably got enough. Everybody's got a ton of stuff.
OSMT, remember, our final gathering is after Vespers in the Creekside, and anyone that wants to join us is welcome. And thanks to all who shared. Thanks for coming. And in a very, very deep sense, the peace of the Lord be with you.
And also with you.
You can even hug somebody on your way out.
Yeah.